restaurant, okay? In the city, full time. We needed the money. Her grandmother looked at her in confusion. I don't have a job yet here, she confessed. But I thought I might go to work over at the gas station where Janet's brother works. I put in an application there. You are going to high school, young lady, and even if you weren't, a gas station is no place for a girl to work. What kind of boy is going to go out with a girl like that? Who cares about boys? Kay said. Look, Mom will sign any form I need to get my GED. No, she will not, Kay's grandmother said. Ellen! What? The annoyed shout came from above. Come down here and listen to your daughter. Do you know what she's planning to do? Do you know what she's been doing? A couple of minutes later, Kay's mother was there too, hair pulled back with a red leather kerchief. She was wearing a black t-shirt and sweatpants. What were you doing?
I wasn't doing anything, Kay said. She should have known this fight was coming, but now she felt distant from it, as though she were watching from far, far away. I wasn't going to school, and I wasn't telling Grandma about it.
Don't be smart, Kay's grandmother said.
Ellen leaned against the doorway to the kitchen. Look, it doesn't matter what she's been doing because we're going to be in New York the beginning of next week. I'm fronting Meow Factory. Both Kay and her grandmother graced Ellen with almost identical looks of horror. Ellen shrugged, moving past them to fill the coffee pot with water.
I was going to tell you last night, but you never showed up for dinner.
I'm not going to New York, Kay said, disgusted at how childish she sounded. This was the same girl who had insulted the unseelie queen's favorite knight, who had talked down a Kelpie.
Ellen, you can't seriously mean that you don't care that your only daughter has not been attending high school?
Kay's grandmother's lips were pressed in a thin line. Ellen shrugged.
Kay's a smart girl, Mom. She can make those decisions for herself.
You're her mother. It's your job to make sure that she makes the right decisions.
Huh, did that ever work with me? You tried to make all my decisions for me and see where it got us both.
I'm not going to make that same mistake with Kay. So what if she doesn't want to go to high school? High school sucked when I had to go, and I can't imagine it's any better now. Kay can read and write. That's more than plenty of high school seniors can say. And she's probably read more books than most girls her age.
Ellen, don't be stupid. What's she going to do for a living? What's in her future?
Don't you want something better for Kay than what you have?
I want her to have the future she wants.
Kay slid out of the room. They would be arguing for long enough that they wouldn't notice or care for a while. She just wanted to sleep. The phone rang close to her head, where she'd dropped it. Kay groaned and pressed the on button.
Hello, she said groggily.
She hadn't managed more than a fitful sleep, tossing and turning. The blankets were too warm, but kicking them off had made her feel unsafe, exposed. Her dreams were too full of slit-eyed things poking her with clawed fingers.
Fuck! You're there!
She recognized the voice as belonging to Corny. He sounded astonished and very relieved.
Corny, I got thrown out. I couldn't find a way back to you.
She looked at the clock. It was 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
I thought maybe the hill was only open at night. I'm coming over.
She nodded and then, realizing he couldn't see her, spoke the thought aloud.
Yeah, definitely. Come over. Are you okay?
The phone clicked off, and she scrubbed a hand restlessly through her hair before letting her head fall back onto the pillow.
The glamour looks good,
was the first thing that Corny said as he walked into her bedroom. Then he looked around.
Hey, you've got rats.
She blinked up at him.
How did you get out? I was going crazy looking for you. If the cops had seen me, they would have thought I was some nutjob grave robber trying to dig up bodies with my bare hands.
I woke up outside the hill this morning.
I figured that you'd ditched me and I was going to do a Rip Van Winkle and find out that it was the year 2112 and no one had ever even heard of me. He grinned wryly.
Reuben threw me out. I'm sorry. I didn't want to leave you, but I was afraid if I told him that he would figure out who I was.
Corny smiled. He didn't know? She shook her head and shuddered.
So, what did you think of the Unseelie Court?
A slow, wicked smile spread on his face.
Oh, Kay, he breathed. It was marvelous. It was perfect.
She narrowed her gaze.
I was joking. They were killing things, Corny. For fun. Things like us.
He didn't seem to hear her, his eyes looking past her to the bright window.
There was this night, not yours, he...
Corny shivered and seemed to abruptly change the direction of his sentence.
He had a cloak all lined with thorns.
I saw him talking to the queen, Kay said. Corny shrugged off his jacket. There were long scratches along his arms.
What happened to you?
Corny's smile widened, but his gaze was locked in some memory. He shifted it back to her.
Well, obviously I got inside the cloak.
She snorted.
What a euphemism.
Did he hurt you?
No more than I wanted him to, Corny said.
She didn't like it. Neither what he was saying, nor the way he looked when he talked about it.
How about you, Kay? Did you revenge yourself on Robin of the White Hair?
She couldn't help the blush that crept across her cheeks.
What?
He demanded. And she told him, the blush growing hot as she did. It sounded even more pathetic out loud.
So what you're telling me is that you got him to kiss you once on the lips and once on the ass.
Kay glared at him, but she couldn't help giggling.
I don't know if I should call that slick or be really afraid what you are going to use that name of his for in the future. Can you just keep ordering him around indefinitely?
Kay aimed a mock kick in his direction.
What about you and your knight? I mean, look at your arms. Is that normal?
Makes me shiver when I touch them, Corny said reverently.
At least we're scaring each other.
Yeah, well, I better get back home. What's next on the fairy agenda? Kay shrugged.
I get sacrificed, I guess.
Great. When is that? Kay shook her head. Wish I knew.
Samhain. That's Halloween, right?
Probably at night. Corny looked at her incredulously.
Halloween is in 2 days.
I know, Kay said. But it's not like I have to do anything. I just have to yell and scream and pretend to be human for a while.
What if they get pissed that they were tricked?
Kay shrugged. I don't know. It's not my problem, right? All I have to do is be a good victim.
Yeah, hopefully not too good a victim.
Spike and Ludi wouldn't ever put me in any real danger.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good.
You think they would?
I think it sounds dangerous. I think we haven't seen too much so far that is part of fairy and isn't dangerous.
True, Kay said.
Oh, Corny said. Jimmy saw me when I went by the house. He said that if you want that job, you can start tonight at 6. It's the shift before mine, so I guess I'm not fired after all.
She smiled.
So I guess I'll see you tonight.
I'm glad you're okay.
I would be even better if I was still there, Corny said, and all her worry returned in a flood.
Corny.
He smiled, that weird, distant smile that he'd gotten under the hill, and she wanted to shake him by the shoulders. Something had to snap him out of it.
See you tonight, he said, slipping on his jacket. He flinched as the lining brushed his arms, and, uncharitable as it was, she hoped that it was because the scratches hurt.
As Corny left, she looked at the pink sticky notes posted on the back of her door. They were the messages that her mother had taken for her. One was from Jimmy, probably about the job, and the others were all from Kenny.
Kay settled on the mattress on the floor, picked up the phone, and dialed the number on Kenny's first note. She could leave a message for him about where she was working tonight. It was a public place. If he came to visit her there, she could take off the enchantment, and then everything with Janet could go back to normal. "Hey," a male voice answered. There was a vaguely metallic whirring and grating in the background. "Oh, hi," she stammered. I thought you'd be at school." "You called my cell phone," Kenny said. "I'm in shop." "This is Kay." She felt stupid again, as though a few words from him were some kind of benediction of which she was unworthy. "I know. Teacher's about to have a hernia, so we gotta talk fast. I want to see you. Tonight."
"I have to work. You could come by."
"What time?" he said, interrupting her. She felt awkward, hyper-aware of each word she spoke, waiting for him to start teasing her and absurdly grateful when he did not.
6.
"Meet me after school. You know which one my car is?"
"No. Why don't you just come by my job?"
She tried to wrest back control of the conversation. "By the entrance, then. The big one. I have to see you." She hesitated, but she had no real reason not to meet him there. After all, removing the enchantment would only take a moment.
What happened after? Well, maybe it would be better if she was somewhere she could leave.
"Okay."
"Good."
With that, the phone hung up, leaving her feeling as though she had drunk 2-day-old coffee on an empty stomach. Her nerves were fried. When she lifted a hand, she was unsurprised to find it vibrating slightly, like a struck guitar string. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath, then shucked off Corny's butchered clothes and put on some of her own. They fit over the illusion of a smooth back easily, but her dual senses could feel the soft cotton of the t-shirt against her wings. It was weird to be standing outside a school that she should have been going to, but didn't. Some of the kids looked familiar, people she had known from grade school. Mostly, they all just looked like the strangers they were.
"Human," her mind whispered. "They're all human, and you're not."
She shook her head. She didn't like where those thoughts took her. It was alien enough that she hadn't been in a high school in years. Sometimes, like now, she missed it. She'd hated elementary school. She and Janet had been friends by default. Kids teased Janet for her secondhand clothes and Kay for her stories. But in the city, no one had known Kay, and besides, there were lots of weird kids. But just when things had gotten better, she'd left.
"Hey,"
Kenny said. He was wearing sunglasses and a gray t-shirt under a heavy navy flannel. He took off the glasses when he got close to her. Dark circles ringed his eyes.
"Why didn't you call me yesterday? I left a million messages at your house. Your mother said that you were at Janet's, but I checked. You weren't there."
"I'm sorry," she said. "I was out." He looked so serious that there was something suddenly funny about it. The magic came easily now, rushing to her fingers and spiking along her tongue, but she made no move to lift the enchantment.
"Kay, I..."
he started, then seemed to think better of whatever it was he was going to say.
"I can't sleep. I can't eat. All I can do is think about you."
"I know," she said sweetly. Kids passing by them gave Kenny sidelong glances. She suddenly understood why she had let him kiss her in the diner, why she had wanted him at all. She wanted to control him. He was every arrogant boyfriend that had treated her mother badly. He was every boy that told her she was too freaky, who had laughed at her or just wanted her to shut up and make out. He was 1,000 times less real than Reuben. Her face split in a wide grin. She had no desire to play pretend anymore, no need to prove her worth by Kenny's regard, no desire to know how different the lips of a popular boy were from any other boy.
"Please, Kay,"
he said, reaching for her wrist, holding it tightly, pulling her to him. This time she pulled away abruptly, not letting him crush her to him, his lips nowhere near close enough to take another kiss. Instead, she twisted her hand out of his grip and sprung up onto the cement edge of the steps.
"Something you want?"
Kay taunted. Kids had stopped along the path, watching.
You,
Kenny said, reaching for her again, but she was far too quick. Dancing out of his grasp, she laughed. You can't have what you can't catch, she goaded, cocking her head to one side. Madness made the blood dance in her veins. How dare he make her feel awkward? How dare he make her measure her words? He snatched for her hand, but she pulled it away easily, spinning along the cement wall.
Kay,
he said. She squatted down, legs wide, chin thrust toward him.
Do you adore me, Kenny?
Yes, he said frantically.
Are you besotted with me? Would you die to have me?
Yes! Kenny's eyes were dark with desire and fury. Behind him, students were laughing and whispering to one another. Kay laughed, too. She didn't care in the least.
Tell me again what you would do to have me.
Anything, he said, without hesitation. Give me a chance. Make me do something. The laughter died in her throat. She tossed the magic off him, dispersing the threads of it with a sweep of her hand as one would brush aside cobwebs. Never mind, she said, angry without being sure of why, angry and suddenly ashamed. Kenny looked around him, the school apparently coming into focus for the first time. She could see the blush creep up his tattooed neck. He looked at her with something like horror in his eyes.
What the fuck did you do to me?
Tell Janet to call me, she said, not caring that that made no sense, not caring about anything except that she needed to get out of there, needed to get away before she careened totally out of control. She didn't even spare him a glance as she crossed the student parking lot, heading home. Jimmy was waiting for her in the office of the gas station. He handed her a blue jacket with an Amoco logo in the corner that Kay had never seen Corny wear. She put it on dutifully while he explained what she had to do. A few cars had come through, and she had handled the pump gingerly, careful of the metal. Her head swam with the noxious fumes of the gasoline and the terrible thoughts of what she had done. It had felt so good, so absolutely right to taunt Kenny as she had. And now, knowing what she could do, was it possible to unlearn it, or just a matter of time before she used it again? There was a rustling sound nearby, and Kay looked toward the woods warily. It was mischief night, and Jimmy had already warned her that kids might try to toilet paper the place. But the figure that emerged had hair as black as oil, and the cloak on his shoulders blew back to reveal thorns on the inside, set like a bed of nails. Other than the white of his skin, the only pale thing he wore was a single white stone swinging on a long chain.
You? She said. You're the Seely Spike told me about?
She'd seen him talking to Nick Nevin at the ball. He had seemed loyal to the Queen. Was that part of the plan?
You're in good hands now, Nephomail said. You made the marks on Corny's arms.
Indeed, I did. He is exquisite. Up close, his eyes were yellow. Looking into those eyes, she suddenly knew why they seemed familiar. She'd seen them in the bar the night that Lloyd had lost it.
You, Kay said. You did something to Lloyd, didn't you?
We needed you to come home, Kay. The knight touched the stone around his neck, and Kay felt magic sweep around her, settling on her body with an oppressive weight. She felt smothered for a moment as sense became vague and her vision dulled.
Remember, we have to make it look real, he said as she choked.
What are you doing to me? Kay managed to say. Everything felt numb and strange.
That glamour you were wearing would fool no one. I am simply restoring the one you should have been wearing.
But Halloween isn't till tomorrow, Kay protested. There was a strange prickling all along her arms. This time it didn't seem as though it came from inside her. Something was happening. Her heart sped, and she could feel something, a strangeness. And then a dark shape hurtled out of the clouds, Something roared over them. Kay threw her arms up over her face. She tried to scream, but when she opened her mouth, it was filled with wind. Hands clutched her shirt and legs and hair, lifting her and passing her up into a mass of creatures. She kicked and bit, tearing their long corn-silk hair and ripping their powdery wings. Pointed, cat-like faces hissed, and fingers pinched her, but they flew on in a long train of monsters, and she was with them.
9. You whom I could not save, listen to me. Czesław Miłosz, Dedication. Kay's throat was raw with screaming. Sharp claws bit into her wrists while bat and bird and insect wings moved with less noise than sheets drying on a line. They flew through the streets invisibly. She screamed, but it seemed that they moved between this world and the next because no one looked up and no one spoke and no one did more than shiver maybe or twitch a little as a horde of monsters vaulted through the skies above them. Kay bit and scratched and squirmed and tore till the feathery dander of her wings shimmered all over her captors. Not once did they loosen their hold. They were one sinuous being of which she was only a tiny, unwilling part, and all she could do was scream. Then they swooped down, dropping through the sky so fast it stopped her breath. Cemetery Hill vaulted up to meet her. The air forced her screams back down her throat, and she swallowed them. Her ankle twisted as she fell forward onto her hands and knees. For a moment she couldn't breathe. The monsters dropped easily around her, skittering and jumping on the ground. Every cut and bruise seemed to come alive, throbbing with vigor. Her bones felt loose in their sockets. Black, shiny eyes like her own stared back from the dozen or so creatures that glanced at her. Something grabbed hold of Kay's hair and pulled her head back so that she was staring up into gold-flecked owl eyes.
"Tasty mousy."
The creature's thick, dark lips moved slowly over the words. Its voice was like dried leaves being crushed. Kay shut her mouth. Others were crowding in, their faces pressing too close. Their hungry heat dizzied her. She flailed her hands to keep them away. Little winged creatures flitted around and showed their teeth.
"Grab snatch, great fun," the owl-eyed woman said, jerking Kay's hair hard enough to pull her whole body with it. "Such a fine, fine treat."
The creature let go of her, and she fell on already raw knees.
"Let her be," Nephemael said, jerking her to her feet.
It was as if something had sawed the hill off at the base and raised it on fat pillars. Mushrooms, corpse pale and each the size of her fist, ringed the grounds. Beneath that earthen ceiling, marvelous folk feasted as though it were a tent. Nephemael's fingers pressed into her shoulder as though determined to bruise. The thorns that capped each gloved finger scraped across her skin with each stumbling step. He brought her to the raised earthen dais, and she had to take several deep breaths to keep back the terror that was threatening to overwhelm her. The queen sat on her throne. Twin boys with goat feet knelt on either side of her, one absently playing a flute. Reuben stood on her left side, his clothes all of a dark silver fabric that managed to look like cloth and metal at the same time. Jagged freshwater pearls circled his collar and cuffs, reminding her of teeth. He looked magnificent, shining like the moon herself. He was as distant as the moon, too, expressionless and grim. On the queen's right side, there were two more knights. One dressed in a red so dark it was almost brown, and the other in smoky blue. Farther back on the dais, mostly hidden by the throne itself, a fox-faced creature wearing an oddly shaped skullcap paused, one claw holding a brush over a long curling sheet of white birch bark that it was using as parchment. Kay was pushed roughly to her knees. She could feel Nephemael sinking down behind her. The queen of the Unseelie court looked down on her, lips quirking into a smile. Her blood-red hair was pulled back into thick, jeweled braids,
and the dusky gray of her dress made her skin all the more pale and creamy by comparison. She was inhumanly beautiful, but her smile held no fondness. Kay was disturbed to find herself smiling back into those cruel blue eyes nonetheless, longing for them to light with approval. The air was thick with a sweet-smelling pollen that made Kay feel giddy and unfocused. It was hard to get a real breath. The queen's eyes were too clear, too blue, Kay thought. They looked fake. Then the vertigo hit. "Kay Fiersch, the Unseelie Court would bestow a great honor on you." The queen's words dropped into her mind, each one echoing separately, the words making no sense when put together. "Will you submit to it?" Kay knew she had been asked a question and that it was very important she answer it. She tried to gather her scattered thoughts. Blue eyes held hers. She wanted to close her eyes. She wanted to stop the chill that was unfolding inside her, spreading from her chest, filling her with trembling longing. The most she could do was blink slowly. "Perhaps her silence is answer enough," Kay heard Reuben's voice as from a great distance. There was some laughter after he spoke. "Come closer, little mortal." The queen leaned forward, stretching out one lily-white hand, and before Kay had time to consider it further, she was crawling forward to touch it. The queen ran her fingers through Kay's hair, mussing and then smoothing it down again. "You want to please us, do you not, little one?" Yes, she did. She had never wanted anything more. Nick Nevin smiled at that, a smile that curled up at the ends. "In fact, your only desire is to please us, is it not?" "Yes." She shivered with delight as the queen's hand stroked her cheek. "You will please us greatly, child, if you are obedient and merry and do not question those things that you find strange. Do you understand?" "Yes." "We ask that you honor us with your participation in the tithe. Will you accept the burden of this honor?" Something in the phrasing of the question seemed strange, but Kay knew what answer to give. "Yes." The queen's smile was dazzling. Out of the corner of her eye she saw Reuben scowl, and she wondered at that. Wasn't he pleased that his lady was pleased? "My knight will have you groomed and properly attired. You mustn't try too hard to please him. It's a hopeless task." The queen gave an almost imperceptible nod. Reuben was beside Kay then, drawing her to her feet. He smelled of burning cloves. Rath Reuben Rye stood on his lady's left-hand side, in his place of honor. His fists clenched so tightly he could feel the half-moon incisions his nails made in his palms. The girl was answering fatally in her soft-as-ash voice. She had made no move to say his name, and now it was far too late for that. He willed his hands to relax. He did not want his queen to guess at the increasingly dangerous chances he took. Letting the girl ask his name, have absolute power over him, was unintended, but hardly an isolated case of foolishness. At first he had told himself that he was testing himself, but his reasons seemed more complex. He was becoming less clear to himself, a string of actions held together by nothing, with no sequence he could understand. He let his gaze skim out over the crowd. He knew the Unseelie Court, knew the factions and their plans, their squabbles with one another, their desires and their habits. He knew them as only an outsider could, and his lady valued that. That value was balanced against her amusement at his pain. Everything is balance. Everything is ritual. Everything is pain. The solitary fae had gathered warily at the edges of the brew. He knew that many among them had no wish to be tied to the Unseelie Court, and for a moment he wondered if they could somehow refuse the sacrifice. but he could see from where he stood that they were drinking the traditional wine pressed from nettles. They had come to accept their servitude. Indeed, servitude might offer them some protection that independence had not. A soft sound brought his eyes back to Kay. He noted the bruises and faint raised marks that looked like scratches. She was gazing at the queen with an adoration that sickened him. Was that how he had once looked at the Seely queen when he had vowed himself to her? He remembered that when his bright lady had but glanced at one of her knights, it was as if the sun shone for that night alone. His own oath to her had been so easy to say, all the promises he had wanted to make wrapped into those formalized phrases. And he was still doing her bidding now, wasn't he? He wondered again as he stared into Kay's face, as she waited happily for him to betake her into the sunless caverns of the Unseelie Palace and pretty her up for her murder. Just what was worth the pain of this? "Come," he said. Reuben walked from the brew down hallways that shone with mica, their ceilings tangled with roots. Lights were dim and infrequent, candles oozing wax down the side of the wall from the niches they were set into. He heard the dull thud of her heavy boots as she followed him, and he wanted to look back, to give her the comfort of a smile at least, as she tried to keep pace through these winding passageways. But a smile would be a lie, and how would that serve her? They passed by orchards of trees, white as bone and heavy with purple fruit. They passed through caverns of quartz and opal. They passed through rows of doors, each with a different face carved on it. Above it all, the ceiling shimmered with a distant light. "You may ask me what you will. The queen's strictures are not my own." Reuben hoped that whatever enchantment the queen had put on her was not irresistible. "I'm sorry, you know," she said softly. Her eyes were drugged with enchantment, the lids half closed. One of her hands was running across the sparkling mica wall, stroking it as though it were the belly of some great animal. "Sorry?" he echoed stupidly. "The diner," she said, swaying slightly, the hand on the wall now holding her upright. "I didn't know what I was asking." He flinched at that. Her power over him was greater than any oath. He was literally hers to command, and here she was apologizing for her cleverness. But maybe that was the magic, too, forcing her mind away from survival. Her hand had stilled on the wall, and her eyes found the floor. He took a deep breath. "It was well tricked. Perhaps you will find a way to make it serve you yet." Not wise, that advice. He didn't know why he had put her through all the trouble of drawing the arrow from his chest when he was apparently at such pains to get himself run through again. Fay, as one of his own folk, she suddenly laughed. "Are we really going to get me a dress?" He nodded. "There is a seamstress who can weave spiders back from silk. She will make sure you have a dress." He bit off the end of the phrase, not knowing how to finish it. This wasn't a ball gown. It was a shroud. "A fine dress," he finished badly, but there it was. Kay grinned with delight, turning delicately on one foot, improvising a staggering dance as she followed him down the shimmering hallway, repeating his words. "Spiders back from silk." Skillywidden's quarters were deep in the cavernous depths of the palace, where Reuben seldom had reason to go. Bolts of satins glowing summer warm and golden, silks that would easily pass through the eye of a needle. Heavy brocades rich with strange moving animals were all scattered along the floor in the dim room. A long wooden table was covered with silver bowls of varying sizes, holding pins, spools of thread, and trims. Skins of mice, drops of shimmering dew, leaves that would never fade, and other less pleasant things. The most fantastical things in the room were those that appeared the most ordinary, Reuben knew. the loom that could weave folk into tapestries, binding them there till this or that term was met, looked like an old and much abused loom, nothing more. The spindle was much the same, rough wood and plain, but he knew that the long black thread it was wound with was human hair. The seamstress herself was a small creature with spindly limbs, long and awkward. She was draped in sheer black cloth that hid half of her face, and hunched so far over that her arms almost touched the floor. Reuben bowed shallowly as shining black eyes regarded him. Skillywidden hissed her greetings and shuffled over to lift Kay's thin arms, measuring their width by squeezing them between her thumb and first finger. When Kay's brown eyes caught his, he could see the glint of fear in them, although her body remained limp.
"Toothsome," Skillywidden rasped speculatively. "Smooth skin. What shall I trade for her? I could make you a tunic with the scent of apple blossoms. That would remind you of home, no?"
Kay shuddered. "I am here for a gown, not to trade," Reuben said, repressing a shudder himself. "The queen would like her better dressed for the revels, seeing as she..." Again, it was hard to find the right words so as not to alarm the girl. "Is a guest of honor." Skillywidden chittered and began digging through her bolts of cloth. Kay's drugged haze seemed to keep her from remembering that the seamstress scared her, and she was now stroking a fabric that shifted color as she touched it.
"Stretch out your arms," the seamstress croaked. "Wide as a bird. There."
Kay held up her arms while Skillywidden draped her with fabrics and whispered incoherently. The little crone grasped Kay's chin suddenly and jerked it downward, then shuffled over to her bowls, digging around in them. There was nothing for Reuben to do but wait. Apple blossoms no longer reminded Reuben of home, although the Seely court had reeked of them. No. Now the scent of apple blossoms reminded him of a tree woman, whose brown face had been tranquil as dirt despite how far she was from her tree. She had been a prophet, but she would not prophesy for the unseely queen. He had been ordered to persuade her. What he remembered most now, however, were the tree woman's last words to him, spoken as mossy fingers scraped his cheek and thick sap ran from the many cuts in her body.
"It is you who are dying," she had said.
You can break a thing, but you cannot always guide it afterward into the shape you want.
"Night," Skillywidden said, holding up a skein of thin, white silk. "Is it meat?"
"Send the dress to my rooms," Reuben said, pulling himself from his thoughts. "The queen desires her to be clad and back in the brew tonight." Skillywidden looked up from the collection she was assembling, blinked owlishly, and grunted. That was enough of a response for him. He had no need to urge further swiftness on the seamstress. Kay was likely to benefit from any delays. "Come," Reuben said, and Kay followed him tractably. She looked drunken with magic. Retracing their steps through the Palace of Termites, he at last brought them to a wooden door carved with a crude unicorn. He opened it with a silver key and let her go inside before him. He watched her stop to look at the books that covered a low table, running her hands over slim paperback volumes of Yeats and Milton, lingering as she touched a leather volume with silver clasps. It was a book of old songs, but there was no title on the dusty cover, and she did not unclasp it to look at the pages. On the wall, there was the old tapestry, the one he had slashed into shreds one night long ago. He wondered whether his room looked like a cell to her. It couldn't have been what she had expected after the marvelous things she had seen elsewhere. Kay was looking at the tapestry, studying what was left of it.
"She's pretty. Who is she?"
"My queen," he said. He wanted to correct himself, but he couldn't.
"Not the Unseely Queen? The other one?"
Kay sat down on the drab coverlet of his bed, tilting her head, still looking at the figure. He didn't need to look to see the depiction. Dark hair falling like a cape over the back of her emerald dress. Beautiful, but only stitcheries. A mortal had woven it, a man who, having caught sight of the Seely Queen, had spent the remainder of his short life weaving depictions of her. He had died of starvation, raw red fingers staining the final tapestry. It was a long time that Reuben had envied him such perfect devotion. "The other one," he agreed.
"I read that," Kay pointed to Paradise Lost. "Well, part of it."
"Horror and doubt distract his troubled thoughts, and from the bottom stir the hell within him, for within him hell he brings, and round about him, nor from hell one step more than from himself can fly by change of place," he quoted.
"It was in one of those huge anthology books, but we didn't actually talk about it in class. I kept the book after I dropped out. Do you know what high school is?"
Her voice sounded drowsy, he thought, but the conversation was relatively normal. While the enchantment lingered, it no longer seemed to overwhelm her. He allowed himself to see that as a positive sign.
"We know about your world, at least superficially. The solitary fae know more. They are the ones huddled around windows, watching television through the blinds. I've seen a stick of lipstick traded for an unseemly amount among dryads."
"Too bad they didn't let me bring my bag. I could have bribed my way out of here," Kay snickered, pulling herself all the way onto his bed.
She was drawn up against the headboard, black jeans frayed at the ankles where they touched the scuffed boots. Just a girl. A girl who shouldn't have to be this brave. Around her wrist, a rubber band encircled the flesh, faded patterns drawn in blue ink still visible. No rings on those fingers. Nails bitten to the quick. Details. Things he should have noticed. She looked tired, he realized. He knew little of what her life was like before he had made a mess of it. With a grimace, he remembered the ripped shirt that she had ripped further to bind his wound.
"At least we think we know something of your world. I do not, however, know near as much as I ought about you."
"I don't know much about the world," Kay said. "I only know about the crappy town I grew up in, and the even crappier city we moved to after that. I've never even been out of the country. My mom wants to be this singer, but mostly she just winds up getting drunk and screaming how other chick vocalists suck. God, that sounds depressing."
Reuben thought of what would happen if the sacrifice was not made, if by guile or chance or something else, Kay escaped. The solitary fae would be free for 7 years. He imagined the chaos that would ensue. It very nearly pleased him.
"I don't think I've exactly been cheery myself, Fair Kay."
She sighed, smiling, and let her head fall back, her ragged blonde hair spreading out in a halo over his pillows. He thought absently that he would like to braid that hair the way he had once braided his sister's.
"I went to high school for a while," she continued, "and then I got out of the habit. People usually think that I'm pretty weird, which is funny at the moment. Maybe funny is the wrong word."
He sat on the edge of the bed, just listening.
"I thought weirdness was a good thing. I don't mean that defensively either. I thought it was something to be cultivated. I spent a lot of time hanging around bars, setting up equipment, breaking it down, loading up vans, fishing my mom's head out of toilets. Things other kids didn't do. And sometimes things just happen. Magical things that I couldn't control. But still, all this? You? It's so hard to accept that you're really real."
She said the last with a hushed reverence that was completely undeserved. Still, she sounded so normal, conversational. She even looked normal, if a touch too comfortable on a stranger's bed.
"Do you still want to please me?"
Her smile was surprised, a little baffled.
Of course I do.
It would be better if you did not, he said, hesitating, trying to find a way to reason her out of enchantment. He could do nothing for her if she was like this when the actual ceremony took place. It would be better if you acted according to your own desires. She sat up and looked at him intently. Do you? Don't you want to go home? To the Seelie Court? He allowed himself to say it. For a long moment, he considered what she asked, and then he shook his head. Once I wanted nothing more. Now, I think I would not be welcome among them, and even were I, it is unlikely we would suit. You're not the way everyone says you are, Kay said, looking at him so fiercely that he couldn't meet her gaze. I know you're not. You know nothing of me, he said. He wanted to punish her for the trust he saw on her face, to raise it from her now so that he would be spared the sight of her when that trust was betrayed. He wanted to tell her he found her impossibly alluring, at least half enchanted, body bruised and scratched, utterly unaware she would not live past dawn. He wondered what she would say in the face of that. Instead, he forced a little laugh. Let me explain again. Of the host of the Unseelie Court are many unconcerned by blood and death, save as amusement. But the host is more than a scourge. Nick Nevin rules over ancient secrets, buried in the bowels of warrens and fens. The twilight holds as many truths as the dawn, perhaps more, since they are less easily perceived. No, I do not think that I would be welcomed back, now that I can see that. But they... Kay began, and he held up a hand to forestall her objection. Smallish sects of beings, of which Fairy is certainly one, require enemies to give them purpose. Think on Milton's angels. Was not his god wise in giving them a devil to fight? Kay was quiet a moment. Okay, you're saying that the Seelie Court needs to hate the Unseelie Court. But does that mean that you think that they're not all bad? I can think of no insult too rich for the Unseelie Queen. But I have seen kindness in some of her court. More kindness and wisdom, surely, than I would have ever been given leave to expect. So what adversary does the Unseelie Court have? Again, the parallels to your devils are amazing. They struggle with their own boredom. It is a struggle that often requires increasingly cruel diversions. Kay shuddered. And you? Reuben shrugged. He had nearly forgotten what it felt like to just sit and talk with someone. I am some other thing. Not of any court, nor truly solitary. There are too many possessors of my soul. She moved to her knees and reached for both his hands. Just so you know, I trust you. You shouldn't, he said automatically. Nevertheless, he found himself no longer wanting to punish her for her faith in him. Instead, he found himself wanting to be worthy of it. He wanted to be the knight he had once been, just for a moment. He watched her take a breath, stealing herself, perhaps, for the next turn of the conversation. He found that he could not bear it. Reuben leaned forward before he might think to do otherwise and pressed a kiss to her dry lips. Her mouth opened with a rush of warm breath, and her arms ran over his shoulders to rest lightly, almost hesitantly, at the nape of his neck. His tongue swept her mouth, searching for some escape from the chill inside him. It felt so good it made his teeth hurt. Nor from hell one step more than from himself can fly. Charmed. He was kissing a charmed girl. He jerked his mouth back from hers. She looked a little dazed and ran her tongue over her lower lip, but said nothing. He He wondered what exactly she might think of it when her mind was better disposed toward the contemplation of such things. But then, his mind whispered, tomorrow would never come to her, would it? There was only now, and if he wanted to kiss her, well, it was only kissing. Kay moved slightly back from him, folding her knees against her chest. Would that piss her off? Again, he didn't need to ask to whom she referred. No, he said, rubbing a hand over his face, giving a short laugh. Hardly. It would doubtless amuse her. What about the other one? The other lady? He closed his eyes reflexively, as if something had been thrown at him. He wondered why he was enamored of a girl that could dissect him with the odd comment, throw him off balance with the idle, earnest question.
You can kiss me if you want,
she said softly, roughly, before he found an answer. It seemed that the magic had burned out of her, because her eyes were as clear as they were bright. He could not tell whether the queen's spell held her or what compulsions it put on her.
I should just stop asking you stupid questions.
He leaned forward, but there was a rapping on the door then, soft but insistent. For a moment, he didn't move. He wanted to say something about her eyes, to ask her perhaps a better question about her enchantment, or at least one that might produce a better answer. Tell her that she could ask him anything she wanted. And he wanted to kiss her, wanted it so badly that he could barely pull himself to his feet, march to the door, and heave it open. Skillywidden had somehow gotten a red cap to do her delivering for her. It stood in the doorway, stinking of congealed blood and rot. Pointed teeth showed as it smiled, looking beyond him to the girl on his bed. Reuben snatched the white cloth out of its hands. This better be clean.
Lady wants to know if you're done with her yet.
The leer on its face made it obvious how the red cap interpreted those words. Fury rose in him, choked him so unexpectedly that he feared he was trembling with it. He took a breath, then another. He trusted that the messenger would not notice. Red caps were not much for details. You may tell her that I have not yet finished, he said, meeting that gaze with what he hoped was a small smile and a bow of his head as he shut the door. But I expect to, in short order. When he turned back to her, Kay's face was blank. He swallowed the emotion he felt without even bothering to identify it. Put it on, he said harshly, not even trying to keep the anger out of his voice, letting her think it was directed at her. He tossed the gown toward Kay, watched her flinch as the slippery silk slid over the edge of the bed, watched her lean down mutely to pick it up again. She didn't trust him after all. Good. It is time, he said. 10. A word is dead when it is said, some say. I say it just begins to live that day. Emily Dickinson, 6, A Word. Corny sank lower in the warm, silty water as Nephemail swept into the room. The fairy women who had cut his hair and oiled his skin finished and left without being told to do so. They have made you quite lovely, Nephemail said, yellow eyes reflecting in the flickering candlelight. Corny shifted self-consciously. The oil made his skin feel weird, even under the water. His neck itched where stray strands of cut hair stuck in the oil. Making me look good is about as likely as turning lead into gold, he murmured, hoping he sounded witty.
Are you hungry?
Nephemail asked in his rich-as-butter voice. Corny wanted to ask about Kay, but it was so hard when the knight was walking toward him with slow, even strides. Corny nodded. He didn't trust his voice. He still could only half believe that Nephemail had brought him from his ratty, ridiculous life to this.
In this country, there are fruits that taste better than all the meat of your land.
His wide lips twisted into a grin.
And I'm allowed? Very like, very like.
Nephemael gestured to a pile of clothing. Dress, and I will show you. Corny was both grateful and disappointed when Nephemael left him to dress on his own. Hurriedly pulling on the blue velvet tunic and tight pants, Corny ignored the dampness of his skin. Nephemael was waiting in the hall. He ran his fingers through Corny's hair, smoothing it back into place.
A compliment would go amiss, I'm sure.
With those hands on him, he could hardly manage a reply.
Come,
Nephemael said, and Corny followed.
Candle wax dripped down the walls in an imitation of the stalactites above them. He could hear music and laughter as from far away. They walked through open doors of silver ivy to a garden where silver apples weighed the boughs of trees nearly to the ground. A slender path of white stones wound around the trees and back over itself throughout the garden. Above the orchard, the curved ceiling glowed as though it